from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our first half hour, San Francisco HIV prevention specialist Dr. Grant Colfax has been appointed by President Obama to direct the Office of National AIDS Policy. His programs, while director of HIV prevention at the San Francisco Health Department, have been credited with helping in the recent decline of new HIV infections in San Francisco. He'll join us for the first half-hour segment. Then at 9:30, a new report on the state of the Bay Area economy from a business-sponsored public policy group finds a remarkable resilience among Bay Area businesses in spite of hard times statewide and nationally. We'll discuss areas of growth stagnation in the Bay Area economy and challenges in the coming years. Forum is next. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Wednesday of last week, President Barack Obama named HIV prevention specialist Dr. Grant Colfax to be the new head of the Office of National AIDS Policy. A research scientist who spent years with the San Francisco Department of Public Health as Director of Health and Research, Dr. Colfax joins us for this opening segment of Forum's First Hour from the nation's capital, and welcome. Good morning. Grant Colfax? Well, something went wrong here, but we will try to get Dr. Colfax with us. We're trying to connect with him, obviously, from Washington, D.C., where he is now. And I should say just quickly that I think he's there now, Dr. Colfax.
Yes, good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Glad to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happier than you can imagine after that little glitch. First of all, congratulations. We're delighted with your appointment, and you must be excited.
Well, thank you very much. It is exciting to be here and exciting to address HIV/AIDS at the national level. And we really are at a transformative time in this country with regard to HIV/AIDS. We have a national HIV/AIDS strategy, and it's really going to be exciting to work with the nation and the community to move it forward.
Yeah, you even used that phrase, transformative future, in your speech when you said it's a future possibly of AIDS-free, of an AIDS-free generation is a real possibility.
Well, it is remarkable. In the last few years in particular, we've had really some striking scientific advances in both prevention and care, and we really are for the first time talking about an AIDS-free generation. Certainly, we have multiple challenges to address both domestically and internationally before we get there, but the very fact that this is now in the dialogue is quite inspirational and very exciting.
When you were here, I mean, you had a remarkable track record. A lot of your focus is on behavioral risks with drugs, specifically with methamphetamine use, and a lot of education, prevention, and advocacy, and particularly expanding testing and treatment support efforts. Essentially, are you going to move that to the macroscopic level of Washington and nationally?
Well, that's one of the focuses of the national HIV/AIDS strategy, and one of the things that I think is important to really bring forth is that the administration developed the first national HIV/AIDS strategy ever for this country, 30 years into the epidemic, and just in July of 2010, the national strategy was released. It's based on numerous meetings with both community and with scientists. It's data driven, and we really do have a blueprint now to move forward as a nation in having an effect on the epidemic. So for the first time, we have a national blueprint. And to get to your question, increasing testing and treatment is a priority in the strategy. And there are really three main outcomes that I think are most important that the strategy outlines. One is to reduce HIV incidence. Two is to increase access to care and improve health outcomes for people living with HIV. And three is to reduce HIV-related disparities.
I'm wondering, though, since San Francisco has often been described as a model of care for HIV/AIDS, this is, in fact, kind of a national standard. Will this simply pretty much be the paradigm for you as you move to the national level?
Well, I think that there are certainly San Francisco in many ways has led the charge against HIV/AIDS and how to address it in a way that addresses the three goals of the strategy. So certainly the experience, the community experience, the research, the advocacy, and so forth. Certainly, what happens in San Francisco doesn't necessarily stay in San Francisco, and I'm hoping that we can take the best of what we've done locally, and really help help inform the national dialogue. And it's also, there are a lot of interesting things happening across the country with regard to HIV. There's some amazingly innovative programs in places like Houston, New York City, and other places that really are innovative in terms of upskilling HIV testing, in terms of addressing stigma and discrimination, about working with youth. So there are a lot of exciting things now that we really need to move forward with in terms of implementation of the strategy.
We're talking, if you just joined us, with Dr. Grant Colfax, newly appointed director of the Office of National AIDS Policy. He's former director of the HIV Prevention and Research at the San Francisco Department of Public Health. You noted a quarter of new cases of HIV/AIDS are women, black women, 30 times the number of white women. And I guess there are a couple of working groups now that are specifically addressing gender disparity.
Yeah, well, it's certainly clear that one of the biggest disparities there are major disparities in the epidemic among women. African American women are particularly more likely to get infected. The infection rates are multiple times higher than in white women, and the reasons for that are still somewhat unclear. But it's certainly a population that we need to bring to the table and have greater dialogues about. How do we increase testing and care in African American women, in particular Latino women as well? I'd also say, when we look at the epidemic, the other large disparity is among gay men. Gay men represent almost two-thirds of new HIV cases in this country, so there's a huge disparity there as well. If you step back and compare rates of infection among gay men compared to other men, there's a 42 times higher rate of HIV infection among gay men compared to other men in this country. So disparities in both the African American community, for particularly gay black men and black women, and then in gay men in general.
How optimistic are you, Dr. Colfax, about just managing AIDS as a chronic disease?
Well, I think we have reasons to be quite optimistic at this point. If people go on, have access to treatment, stay on treatment, adhere to treatment, outcomes are quite good. We also know that, you know, it's not only beneficial to the individual to go on treatment, but there's a clear prevention benefit as well. So it's favorable for the individual to go on treatment. It's favorable for the community in terms of reduced transmission rates. And it's also, you know, it's a smart choice from just a cost perspective, because we know that investing in prevention and treatment early on has huge cost savings for the country long term.
Well, we now have 1.1 million Americans living with HIV/AIDS and 50,000 infected each year. I suspect you believe you can dramatically bring that number particularly down?
I think so. And, you know, the president talked on World AIDS Day of turning the tide with regard to that. And I think that we do have the tools now the scientific tools to know what to do. We have greatly improved testing technologies that can detect HIV faster and earlier in the stage of infection. We have treatments that have been greatly simplified and with the side effects greatly minimized. Obviously, there are a lot of challenges as we move forward, but we really know what the right things to do are. Now the question is, how do we come together as a as a community, looking at the science and really put the goods to work here.
Again, our guest is Dr. Grant Colfax, who was recently named the new director of the Office of National AIDS Policy. If you'd like to join us, let me give you a phone number to do that, because this is a half-hour segment. So if you have something you'd like to contribute, if you'd like to talk to Dr. Colfax, if you have a question or comment, the time to call would be now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your phone calls, so feel free to call us. Again, toll-free, you can join us at 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or posting any questions or comments you might have on our website, which is simply kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And another way to communicate with us is, of course, by going to our Facebook page. We do welcome your calls and your comments and questions, so please feel free to contribute to this conversation. Now, you're going to be heading up the National AIDS Policy Office. What about connections? You mentioned New York and Houston as having programs that are certainly important to, well, revelatory in terms of positive progress. What about on the international level? What about the national AIDS policy work connecting globally?
Well, I think that that's just it. There's a lot that we can do in terms of increasing our connections with the global and the domestic agenda and moving forward. I'm going to be working very closely with Ambassador Goosby, who's leading the PEPFAR international efforts in terms of treatment and testing with HIV. So we are already having dialogues about what synergies can we look at working both domestically and globally. And I think that the PEPFAR program is just a tremendous example of success at the global level. We've gone from treating 1.7 million people to almost 4 million in just a couple of years, and our goal at the end of 2013 is to have 6 million people on life-saving treatment. So really an amazing success of the PEPFAR program.
And can you, before we go to our callers, just talk for a moment about coordinated care and how that's going to work or what you envision?
Well, I think it's clear that we need to do better with coordinated care domestically. If you look at a CDC report that came out this summer, we only have 28% of people living with HIV who have a suppressed viral load, which is really the optimal outcome you want to have with somebody who is on treatment. We're only at 28%. So the coordination of care is vitally important, and that's something that, again, the national strategy calls for. On World AIDS Day, the president announced a $50 million increase in the Ryan White program, much of that specifically going to increasing coordination of care. And then, of course, we have the Affordable Care Act that is poised to kick in 2014, and really ensuring that that's an opportunity to improve our linkage and coordination of care across our programs for people living with HIV is one of the highest priorities of ONAP.
And we're going to go to your calls and emails. And by the way, if you'd like to join us again, this is a half-hour segment, so the time to do it would be now. 866-733-6786 for your calls, or if you email us, forum@kqed.org. You can also go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page. And let's go to San Leandro and welcome George. You're on.
Oh, thanks, Michael, for a very needed program, and thanks, Dr. Kovacs, for your very good work. I'm interested in finding out your views about the fact that the community viral load is very high in prisoners and in prisons, and many of the prisoners after release go out into the community and spread the epidemic. What is the national policy, or will be a national policy, for working with prisoners who are infected and go out in the community?
Yes, well, this is a very important question. It's something that we certainly worked on in San Francisco, and something that we'll be continuing to work on here, and something that has been worked on. I think that you bring up a good point. It loops back to the question of coordination of care, and particularly we know that there are examples of people, particularly on release, who get released and there is no direct linkage to care, and it's just not appropriately coordinated. So it's something that we're going to be working on very, very closely.
Let me thank you for the call. And working on closely meaning what in terms of the work?
Well, I think so. One of the examples is the 12 cities project, which is an initiative that's really focusing on the 12 jurisdictions with the highest HIV rates in the country, really focusing resources on both prevention and treatment. And a number of those places are actually looking specifically at what the caller mentioned: how do we deal with HIV among prisoners? How do we effectively link them to local care? What sort of things can be being done locally, so that, for instance, when somebody is due for release and is on medications, how do they meet up with a case manager? How is that actually coordinated? How do we make sure that they get the housing if they need it, so that they really can adhere to these life-saving medications, again, not only benefiting them, but also benefiting the community by reducing risk of transmission? So there are a number of innovative programs, demonstration projects that are going on right now to try to address this point. And I think what we're going to be doing is stepping back, looking at what's successful in those model programs, and then attempting to scale up.
And what do you see or foresee in terms of expanding HIV testing?
So expansion of HIV testing is vitally important, particularly in communities at high risk for HIV. If we look at the data, again, gay men, black women are not getting tested frequently enough, and I really see, we really see that the Affordable Care Act is an opportunity to do that. HIV testing needs to be a part of routine primary care. People need to get tested frequently, and we need to really break down the stigma and discrimination that is still unfortunately associated with getting HIV tested. As much as we can normalize it, the better we'll be.
You know, you're anticipating my next question, and that is, mm-hmm. it often is not often enough discussed, the stigma. What Again, what do you envision to do about it?
Well, again, I think that if we can continue to have discussions about HIV, making sure that it is part of the national dialogue about healthcare, that we make HIV testing just to be a routine part of what you do when you go to the doctor, just like when you get a cholesterol test, just like when you get a blood pressure test, that in of itself really addresses a part of the stigma and discrimination. And I think that that's really something that we need to do, and I see the Affordable Care Act as an opportunity to move that forward. You know, people will no longer be denied coverage insurance as part of, if they test HIV positive, another way that we're decreasing stigma and discrimination. And then just overall addressing, you know, health issues, health disparities, particularly in the communities that are most affected with HIV, goes a long way towards the stigma and discrimination reductions.
Let me bring Ron on. Ron, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Thank you. For almost two decades, we've been working with the Hope and Beyond Student Service Projects, and they focused on, for here and in India, on the hidden factor, the incubation period where there may be low level or no symptoms of being infected. And that is beyond the considered high-risk groups in the U.S. What's taking place to really eliminate this incubation period and the causation of that incubation period? Is there some way to extract that problem physically within the victim?
Well, I think that if we step back and we look at how HIV testing has advanced over, particularly in the last decade, the concern about an incubation period, and just as I understand the caller's question, sort of the period when HIV may be undetectable based on an HIV test, that's actually gotten very, very short now. So we're actually in a much better place than we ever have been in terms of detecting HIV as early as possible, which is why people should get tested. And we know, unfortunately, that people are still being diagnosed late in the disease across the country. We need to move that dial up to much earlier. The way to do that is for people to get tested. And if you're a gay man, if you're at risk for HIV through having an HIV positive partner or having multiple sex partners, you know, get tested frequently. Right. And in San Francisco, we were recommending that gay men get tested at least every 6 months, for example.
Let me thank the caller and go to something else here, Dr. Colfax. An article appeared in Politico, and essentially it talked about President Obama praising his predecessor, President Bush, for bold leadership on AIDS treatment and prevention. And a number of AIDS activists, Bono, for example, of U2, has stated that he would like to see President Obama follow through on what President Bush did. But there are other AIDS activists who have been pointed in their criticism, and I'd like to get your response to this. This is Michael Weinstein, president and co-founder of the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, who said, and I'm quoting, "The Obama administration's commitment to AIDS has been disappointing." He pointed to nearly flat funding for the Bush Initiative, the presidency's emergency plan for AIDS relief, and a nationwide waiting list for state AIDS drug assistance programs that has reached as many as 10,000 people. That's since President Obama took office. And President Obama on Thursday announced an additional $35 million in funding back in December for state programs, as well as $15 million to fund clinics. But he's saying the administration in general thinks making a speech or putting out a statement is enough to say they've done something, and that's all it's been on AIDS.
Well, I'm a scientist, and I'm data-driven, so I think if we step back and look at the data about what's been accomplished under the administration, it's just remarkable, and this administration has really prioritized and moved forward with HIV/AIDS prevention and care, both internationally and domestically. So specifically with regard to the PEPFAR question, President Obama has built on what President Bush started. If you look at the numbers, again, being a scientist, I look at outcomes. We've gone from 1.7 to almost 4 million people on treatment since the administration has started. The goal is to go to 6 million by the end of 2013. So rather than going into what's being said and what's not being said, I think if we stick to the facts, that's quite a remarkable accomplishment. Domestically, if we look, for the first time, we have a national HIV/AIDS strategy. We have a coordinated approach and a response. And even in these tight budget times, programs were investing domestically in the HIV epidemic. The president's new budget, for instance, includes a $800 million increase in HIV funding across the federal budget. And, you know, going to the question of the ADAP waiting list, we're continuing to address that. On World AIDS Day, the president announced a $50 million increase. Much of that was going to the ADAP waiting list issue, and in this budget, he's actually proposing funding so that the federal share of ADAP increases, and with a proper state contribution, we are hoping that the wait list would be decreased, if not eliminated altogether.
I want to bring a caller on here from Columbus, Georgia. Nathan, join us. Welcome to the program. You're on.
Hi. You keep speaking of these large populations that are in need of HIV support and AIDS awareness and things. We are from Columbus, Georgia. It's a small town, and we need a lot of support in that area. What is the funding program for that?
So, in terms of the national perspective, and one of the things the National HIV-AIDS Strategy has called for, and what the administration has been doing, is putting resources where the epidemic is. So we have very clear areas and populations where the epidemic is higher than in other parts of the country. And again, looking at the data and looking at the science, what the administration has done is reoriented funding appropriately to address the disparities. So I think that looking at your local jurisdiction, looking at how it compares to, you know, how rates of HIV there compare to rates of HIV in the rest of the country, the resources that your jurisdiction would be receiving should be commensurate with the data in hand.
But I'm sure you're aware, Dr. Kovacs, that small town areas and rural areas have often been getting short shrift.
I think that the rural areas are certainly a challenge. We know that people are living with HIV in isolation in the rural areas in many cases, and the question is, how do we improve that? How do we improve outcomes for them? Hopefully the Affordable Care Act will help move that forward. We know that there's room for improvement in terms of increased coordination, and we're committed to help having that happen. There have been a number of dialogues around the national strategy specifically addressing some of these questions, and as we move forward, the rural question is something that we're committed to looking at.
Let me thank the caller and go to an email here from a listener. It says, I heard something about a functional cure for HIV/AIDS created by Sangamo, a Richmond company. Do you know anything about that?
I'm not aware of that.
Okay.
No.
Another email says, are serosorted relationships having a real impact on reducing the overall HIV transmission rate?
So I think what the caller is, or the question is referring to, is serosorting, where people make a decision on what sort of behaviors they engage in sexually based on their serostatus and the serostatus of their partner. It's a good question. There's been a lot of research on that. I don't think we have a definitive answer to know whether it's an effective strategy. A lot of whether serosorting works or not depends on how accurate the partner's knowledge of their status is. So again, I think that it goes back to testing and increasing rates of testing, particularly in populations at high risk for HIV. A lot of research is being done on that. NIH is looking at has funded a number of studies to look at serosorting. So I think we're going to still have to take a wait and see attitude about that.
Well, once again, congratulations to you, Grant Colfax, and best of luck. We are here rooting for you and hope that you really turn the corner.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. It was a pleasure.
Good to have you with us. That's Dr. Grant Colfax, who is newly appointed director of the Office of National AIDS Policy and former director HIV Prevention and Research at the San Francisco Department of Public Health. We spoke to him from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. In the next segment, we're going to talk about the Bay Area economy, a brand new report released just yesterday, a very comprehensive report on the state of the Bay Area economy from a business-sponsored public policy group. Finds, among other things, remarkable resilience among Bay Area businesses in spite of hard times statewide and nationally, but also, as you might imagine, ongoing concerns. When we return on Forum, I'm Michael Krasny.